It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Now, my friends, I want to be fair to President Biden. True, I don't like him. I've made no secret of this. I have often and openly called him the worst president we ever had, and for very good reasons. He is. The man is a pathological liar. The man has no moral compass. He lets others pull his strings. And with all due sympathy to the mental illness he is apparently suffering, he was never the sharpest tool in the shed even before his mind started to fail from dementia or whatever it is he's struggling with. His administration, for all their tough talk against Hamas and all their sympathetic words to Israel, are in fact culpable in the bloodbath of October 7th, because Hamas could not have carried this out apart from Iran. And Iran could not have given them the green light without first being emboldened by the billions upon billions of dollars paid to them under Joe's watch and the previous Obama administration, which also involved Joe as vice president. He warns Iran and other countries that there will be consequences if they get involved in this war, but they are already involved in this war. But right from the onset, Biden had some tough words for those who might get involved, or rather, one tough word, don't. He said it again and again. I have just one word for you if you're thinking of getting involved. Don't. Yeah, one word, like a one-word song by the composer of the TV series theme song, Batman. Don't. What he failed to add was don't, or else the following will happen. Still, as I said, I want to be fair. Biden's very first speech right in the aftermath of all this did strongly call out the evil of Hamas, call it evil, and he was showing a lot of support for Israel. He was, so I will acknowledge that. And for these reasons, I was guardedly optimistic when he offered his next speech, his 15-minute Oval Office address that we heard last week. Well, in this address, he also talked again about the need to help Israel. But right along with that, he talked about the need to send further aid to Ukraine. In fact, he talked every bit as much about Ukraine. I understand. Before the Hamas attack, Biden had already planned a speech about Ukraine. Couldn't he have still separated the speeches for two different occasions instead of putting the Israel speech on top of the Ukraine speech like Windows was once put over DOS? And I'll tell you what else isn't being separated. His bill going before Congress asking financial aid for both countries. So now, anyone who has questions about our involvement with Ukraine is held over a barrel if they want to help Israel. But he wasn't just placing the country of Ukraine next to the country of Israel. He also presented anti-Semitism growing all over the world, and especially here in the United States. He presented anti-Semitism as but one of several problems. In the same breath where he spoke against anti-Semitism in our country, he spoke about the rampant Islamophobia in our country. He even gave an example. He illustrated by sharing a true story. A 6-year-old Palestinian American boy stabbed 26 times by his landlord. The police, based on several interviews, came to the conclusion that this was tied to the Israel-Hamas conflict in the Middle East. Here were Biden's words in the Oval Office. Jill and I were shocked and sickened to learn of the brutal murder of a 6-year-old child and the attempted murder of the child's mother in their home yesterday in Illinois. The child's Palestinian Muslim family came to America seeking what we all seek, a refuge to live, learn, and pray in peace. Okay, let me respond to this. First of all, despite the vile things said about the Jews from many Palestinians and many Muslims, and despite how that makes me feel as a Jew, I am not going to do as the enemies of my people do. I am not going to resort to justifications for things unwarranted. Not every Palestinian hates Jews. I would never make that assumption. Not every Muslim hates Jews. Not every Muslim believes in jihad. And even if this family did, you don't kill innocent children. That's a statement so obvious, I feel stupid even making it. Nobody should even need to say that, but we live in times when such denunciation is not always offered, so I'll offer it. This was horrific. This was bloodthirsty. This was evil. This needs to be condemned, and I do condemn it without even the slightest reservation, okay? But having done so, I do want to point out that while Biden in his Oval Office speech condemned attacks on Israel in general, he did not share any anecdotal examples as he did with this Palestinian boy. God knows there were chilling, blood-crawling examples to choose from, such as babies being beheaded, Jewish women raped and filmed on their own iPhones to be streamed on Facebook. As for Islamophobia in general in our country, yes, there's some, but nothing that's even in the same stratosphere as the rise of anti-Semitism. Are you watching the protests on universities from coast to coast? Are you watching the riots in the streets of New York? Are you listening to chants such as "Gas the Jews"? And how many college classrooms are asking Muslims to stand in the back of the room to shame them? This happened at Stanford with the Jewish students. Now, thank goodness that professor was suspended, but when's the last time you heard about this happening to Muslims in America? And so Biden's speech about Israel was balanced with a call for aid to Ukraine, and his talk of anti-Semitism was balanced by calling out Islamophobia. This is a president trying to have it both ways, trying to take every position on the table. With good old Joe, there's something for everybody. Publicly, he tells Israel we have her back. Privately, according to sources in Israel, pressure is being put upon her to limit collateral damage, something no country can completely control during a war, and something the United States has certainly never done, at least not in wars that we've won. We didn't win that war in Afghanistan where our soldiers' hands were tied, but we did win the war in World War II. What if we'd had such restrictions at that time? The Nazis would have taken over the world. And by the way, if we keep down our current path, we are only a stone's throw from Nazis taking over our current world, or at least those with Nazi ideology. What else do you think "gas the Jews" means? This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Throughout the years on my radio show, when these incidents come up in the news, I sometimes feel the need to stop, back up, and take a more general look at the Quran and the religion of Islam. True or false? The Quran is a peaceful book, and its author, Muhammad, was a peaceful man. False! And yes, I am aware that the word false underneath a statement about gentleness of the Quran sets off all kinds of bells and whistles. It collides immediately into a widely accepting talking point. Today, we are expected to go along with the conventional wisdom that Islam is actually a very peaceful religion hijacked by only a handful of nutcase terrorists who are misrepresenting an otherwise benign movement. Undoubtedly, many listeners right now will want to tell me that there are millions of peaceful Muslims in the world. Indeed, you have met some of them. I believe you. Okay? I believe you. But I have also read the Quran for myself, cover to cover. One who understands the Quran and the teachings of its author, Muhammad, allegedly speaking on behalf of God, also understands the commands to conquer the world in the name of Islam. This conquest is allowed to manifest itself in various stages with a variety of strategies depending on whether the Muslim population is large or small in its respective country. But the ultimate goal is to completely subjugate the nations of the world, offering people the choice of either converting or at least cooperating with Sharia law to some extent. Sharia law, of course, is religious rule. Those who refuse cooperation are to be put to death. This is the destiny of their cause. This is the teaching of their prophet. Now, as a Christian apologist, I have both debated Muslims and shared the gospel with Muslims. Such a balance between direct challenge and friendly interaction has provided me with a unique perspective. For this reason, I commonly receive questions, and let me read a few today. Bob, you have written and spoken on the air a great deal about Islam. Do you believe there are peaceful Muslims? Yes, of course. Of course there are peaceful Muslims. There are many, and I have conversed with quite a few. I've had warm talks and exchanges with wonderful, loving Muslims. In fact, I have observed in almost every Muslim I've encountered a deep, sincere hunger and thirst for God. They're often intrigued when Christians talk about a personal, spiritual relationship with our Creator that goes beyond formal worship. One of today's best-kept secrets, seldom discussed in the media, is that literally millions of Muslims a year convert to Christianity. Now, having said that, I don't mean to suggest that only Muslims interested in converting are peaceful. All kinds of pilgrims of Islam, satisfied with their faith, view the teachings of the Quran and the Hadiths. The Hadiths are additional alleged holy writings. They view the teachings of the Quran and the Hadiths as incentives to become better people, not to raise havoc upon the planet. However, and I really hope you catch this, folks, write it down if you can. Listen as I speak very carefully. These are delicate but important words. You ready? Whereas each and every Muslim practitioner must be evaluated on an individual basis, assessing the religion of Islam itself is quite another matter. I know, nobody wants to hear this, but the Quran really does call for the forceful spreading of Islam. I'm going to quote from a couple of passages. I'm just going to mention the chapter. There are usually a bunch of verses in each chapter, but just for the sake of time, I'm going to tell you the chapter where you can find this. That's why from time to time you'll hear me mention the same chapter. Well, I'm referring to a different verse in the chapter at that point. Anyway, chapter, or surah as it's called, surah 48. Muhammad is God's apostle. Those who follow him are ruthless to unbelievers, but merciful to one another. I'd say those words are fairly clear, wouldn't you? You want some more? Here's some more. Surah 8. Remember when your Lord inspired the angels, I will cast terror into the hearts of those who have disbelieved. So strike them over the necks, smite them over all their fingers and toes. Surah 9. Prophet, make war on the unbelievers and the hypocrites and deal rigorously with them. Hell shall be their home, an evil fate. They swear by God that they said nothing, yet they uttered the word of unbelief and renounced Islam. Another from Surah 9. Believers, make war on the infidels who dwell around you. By the way, infidels are defined in the Quran as people who refuse to convert to the teachings of Muhammad, or perhaps people who had been Muslims but left the faith. Those are the infidels. Now, while the Quran says much about unbelievers in general, it offers additional refined specific comments regarding various people groups who do not embrace Islam, including comments about the Jews. This is especially relevant to our discussion today about what's going on in America and the Middle East between Jews and Muslims. Surah 5, the most vehement of mankind in hostility are the Jews and the idolaters. And then in Surah 2, Jews are described as being cursed. In Surah 3, Jews are headed for hell. Those words were first spoken in the 600s, the 600s, so I probably don't need to remind you that they have nothing to do with Israel's so-called illegal occupation of the West Bank in 1967. Even worse statements can be found in the Hadiths. The hour will not be established until you fight against the Jews, and the stone behind which a Jew will be hiding will say, "Oh my Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, so kill him." Islamic text not only speaks disparagingly of Jews, but Christians as well. Don't worry, fellow Christians, you were not left out. Surah 5, believers, take neither the Jews nor the Christians for your friends. They are friends with one another. Whoever of you seeks their friendship will become one of their number. God does not guide the wrongdoers. As you can see, Muslims are told who to befriend, who to shun, and who to fight. Speaking of fighting, we hear a lot in the news about the belief that paradise awaits those who fall while waging jihad. Jihad literally means the struggle. It refers to waging war violently. In case you're wondering if the Quran truly makes such a promise about the paradise in relationship to jihad, well, it does. As for those who are slain in the cause of God, he will not allow their works to perish. He will admit them to the paradise he has made known to them. That was from Surah 47. And you're wondering right now, yeah, but Bob, aren't there also verses in the Quran that talk about peace? Yes, my friend, it's true that the Quran talks quite a bit about the importance of peace. We can even find verses which go out of their way to forbid forceful conversions. We can. Surah 22, say, "O men, I am sent to you only to give a clear warning." Surah 17, "We have not sent you to be a disposer of their affairs for them." All right, so why the paradoxical pleas for both war and peace? The explanation is actually quite simple. Muhammad was originally hoping to spread his new movement peacefully. When this did not happen, when not everyone found the words as soothing and appealing as he had anticipated, when he found that he needed to conquer places like Mecca by force, and that this was the only way he would get individuals to accept Islam, Muhammad suddenly received new revelations from Allah, and by an amazing coincidence, these updated teachings not only condoned force, but commanded force. Now, here's the thing. Another one of these little secrets, not really a secret, but so few people know it, it may as well be a secret. It should be noted that the Quran's verses are not collected in chronological order. Instead, they appear according to length, ranging from the longest chapter or surah to the shortest chapter or surah. While the commands to wage war are the most important revelations, this does not mean they are all found at the end of the book. Chapters about war and peace are intermingled. And so when people try to change the subject by ignoring the warlike verses of the Quran and instead bring up the peaceful verses, it should be immediately pointed out that these contradictory teachings exist side by side because Muhammad tried to spread his religion in contradictory ways.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. So I was talking earlier about Biden's warning to other countries in the Middle East to not get involved. And I was talking about how spineless and what a weakling he is and how two-faced he is. There have been some attacks over the last few days against American troops, and there have been some reprisals. There have. But you need to understand, I stand by every word I said, because the Biden administration went out of its way to say that these attacks and reprisals have nothing to do with Israel. That's a lot of nonsense, but the fact that he'd go out of his way to say it just substantiates everything I've said about his character. But I have a better person of character to introduce to you. Say hello to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, to be fair, a bag of rocks is probably a better personality than Biden in general.
That's true. You didn't have a very high bar there.
But I got Brendan. Over it. So thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. So one of the things that we talked about off the air that was quite interesting, live on the air before your show, is Gun Owners Radio, where we talk about all the different gun policies and stuff. And you were kind of surprised that we didn't really touch a lot on gun sales. We sort of did.
Well, it's not my place to tell them what to talk about. That's such a big elephant in the room, what happened in Maine and the Democrats immediately screaming for gun control. I thought maybe they might have talked about that.
Yeah, but I still want to point it out a little bit here, because I did talk to them off the air about it, and I thought it was kind of an interesting point. First off, they gave the fact that 60% of gun sales have gone down in the state of California. I mostly blame that on Newsom's new bills taxing gun owners. They increased taxes on ammunition and the weapons themselves as well. So I mostly blame that situation for how low gun sales at gun stores have been as of late. But I thought it was quite interesting that international arms sales, especially in the Middle East, have gone through the roof because of this war that's going on over there in Israel. I also thought that was quite interesting that due to the mass shooting that happened in Maine, which is just a sad situation as it is, gun sales have gone through the roof over there as well, which surprises me because Maine, I think, is a pretty democratic area, isn't it? I would say
it's kind of a mixture. It's okay. Red in some places, blue in others. But this idea that more people would want to carry firearms, it makes a lot of sense because mm-hmm. the people that go off on these shooting sprees do so because they assume the pickings are green. There was a shooting that happened in Texas at a church, and this guy was taken out right away by somebody who was plain enclosed person licensed to carry a firearm. So
and he saved hundreds of lives.
Of course he did. So if you have to just sit around and you're not able to do anything and you're completely helpless until the police finally arrive, it's a real problem, to say the least. So this idea that the solution is to get rid of the guns. Now, this guy in Maine was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And if we want to talk about doing more about mental illness, if we want to talk about the fact that apparently the police were aware that he was saying himself that he's hearing voices, he's concerned that he might want to go out and shoot a bunch of people.
Yes.
Once they heard that, I wouldn't have had a problem with them confiscating his gun, and they didn't. But that's a problem with their procedures. That's not a problem with guns themselves.
Right. What I kind of find interesting is there's no red flag laws or no background checks in Maine. So that's quite interesting, because I always viewed Maine as a Democrat. You told me it's a mixed bag.
It's kind of mixed. Sometimes when you look at the Electoral College, there'll be a vote here and a vote there.
I got you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because I do notice Maine, there's like one giant circle in the center of Maine. I'm like, wow, that person decided
well,
to just
frankly, California is pretty mixed. With the exception of San Francisco and Los Angeles and Sacramento, California is pretty conservative. But you'd never know that because the control is going on from those places.
Right, right. What I meant by that specifically is I just kind of, no offense to anybody from Maine, I viewed all that northeast portion just strictly Democratic until you get to Pennsylvania. Then you get to the actual more.
Yeah, of course, losing your loved one to a gun might just convert somebody into being a little more conservative and wanting to carry. And again, I have no problems with background checks because criminals shouldn't be carrying guns. But Kamala Harris came out and started praising Australia. The country of Australia confiscated every single gun from every single citizen. So our vice president is telling us that she doesn't believe in the Second Amendment.
Right.
She didn't say it in those words, but that's just exactly what she was inferring.
Exactly. So again, our hearts and prayers go out to that whole situation. It was really insane reading the details. My last thing I wanted to point out about this thing, and this is specifically to media, stop putting the shooter's name out there. I don't want to see it in the slightest. You're giving him the credit that he is wanting to get his name out there.
Or whether he himself did this time, often that is the case with people.
Exactly.
And then you get people that are imitators that will want to go and follow suit. Right. Go, I'll go down in a blaze of glory too.
So I implore media, please, please, please do not put the name out there. Okay. I'm begging you. It's the last thing we need to do and try to promote this guy.
Yeah. And you know what else drives me just nuts? And it's in the first couple of hours where we don't know anything yet. Mm-hmm. And they bring on all these talking heads to explain to us exactly what we do not yet know.
Exactly.
And they've frozen all other news. There's plenty of other news going on in the world when this broke out. And this is horrible. And if I lived in Maine, it's all I'd want to hear about. But to just hear these talking heads again and again, well, let me start by saying that we don't know the name of the person. We don't know his motive. Fine. Then what are you talking about it for?
Right. I would wait for an actual police report where they can actually list out everything that happened.
Once there is news, report the news.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about the main topic I wanted to get to tonight.
This is a different kind of Maine, the state of Maine.
No, this is
M-A-I-N, Maine.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to talk about our brand new Speaker of the House. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Johnson is our Speaker of the House.
I'm just glad they finally got somebody. I'd have settled for Bart Simpson after a while.
But I'm not surprised. It seems like, I think this is like Matt Gaetz's best friend inside the House of Representatives. Because every single point I've looked up this guy's background, it's just Matt Gaetz, but in a different
state. Well, now, I understand, though, that he's not part of the conservative caucus. He's been accused of that by the Democrats, and they're calling him a MAGA supporter. It sounds like he's more moderate than they're letting on. And I don't like the moderate Republicans, but that's what I understood, that he's a little more moderate than the Democrats are trying
to portray
him.
That's interesting, because everywhere I've been looking up him, this is the picture perfect of conservatism. Like, for me, before him, it would have been Mike Pence, but then Mike Pence did that horrible, horrible thing on January. He said, I can't do anything about this election. There's nothing wrong here. I'm only vice president. No, you could have done something, but that's another story in its time. So I would have viewed him as like the face of conservatism. This guy here, when I look at his background, I thought for sure he would have been, this is the perfect picture.
Well, I was very impressed with him when I saw him interviewed.
Yes.
I was impressed with what I heard. I hadn't really heard much about this guy before.
To be fair, everything in his interview, every single time is, I just follow what the Bible says over and over. I swear. It always goes back to him and the Bible.
Well, even the moderate Republicans will say the right things, though. But if he's not, I think it's called the the conservative, the Freedom Caucus is what it's called. I was surprised to hear that he wasn't part of that.
I guess.
I wondered why that was, but anyway, we got to give him a chance whether he was part of the Freedom Caucus or not.
So he was sworn in on October 25th. He has only served in Congress for 6 years and 10 months, which is the shortest tenure of any House member.
That's a plus these days, unless the poison of Washington has infected him.
And he is the shortest tenure of any House member to be elected Speaker in 140 years, which is 1883. And the last guy to do that was also from Louisiana, surprisingly enough. John G. Carlisle was his name. And he actually holds the record for the shortest tenure in Congress history to be elected as Speaker of the House. I don't know if you want to call it a coincidence, but that's kind of an interesting fact, to say the least. So let's take a look at his background, because there's two major points, maybe two and a half, where I completely disagree with the guy. But otherwise, I think he follows through on everything.
I'm going to be really curious to hear the one that's the half, but go ahead. Yeah.
So for number one, he proposed the Marriage and Concise Conscience Act, I believe it's called, which prevented the state from engaging in adverse treatment of any person or entity based upon their beliefs about marriage. Many critics were there to quickly denounce, saying that the bill is an attempt to protect people who discriminate against same-sex marriage. Personally, let me just say this. This is a freedom of speech bill, okay? This relates to the call.
Yeah, they're protecting people that may have a different opinion about same-sex marriage, and they want to be free to express it.
Maybe apples and oranges here, but related to the Colorado situation where he didn't want to help out that gay couple in making a cake.
Yes, because he was an artist in the way he put icing on the cake and the message on the cake. Exactly. And he should be allowed to put his message on there, not somebody else's.
And specifically, it's his business there. He should run it how he should want to.
Exactly.
And if gay couples don't want to support it anymore, fine.
And if Ku Klux Klan member went into a bakery and said, we want you to prepare something for a KKK wedding and we want a picture glorifying the KKK, and that guy said he wasn't going to do it, what judge in the land would come down on him? That's ridiculous.
Right. So in my opinion, people like Republican Baton Rouge Metro Councilman John Delgado saying that Johnson for making this a bill is a despicable bigot of the highest order.
But you're agreeing with Johnson for making this
I'm agreeing. I'm saying people like him or other businesses like IBM was one of those who publicly denounced this bill too. They said that concerns about hiring difficulties would likely produce from this situation. I disagree with them entirely. This is just here to protect people who have different opinions on things that most people in
society. And it depends on how you're looking at with the hiring. If somebody wanted to say, I don't hire gay people, period, that's wrong.
Right.
If he said, okay, you're hired to sell computers or build computers, but I don't want some political agenda as a part of my company,
right?
He has every right to say that.
Right. I think every business has to follow through on EEO, which is equal employment opportunities. Everyone is the exact same in the same pool.
Yeah. Anheuser is learning the hard way. Exactly. Their beer doesn't have to be about some social statement.
I agree. Yeah. So moving on, I want to bring up the 2020 election because there's one point here. This is the half point that I'm kind of interested in. He's obviously been a major supporter of Trump throughout his political career. He's continuously pushed him and said.
And Trump has been back him too.
Exactly. Yeah. For example, with the 2020 election, early November 2020, after many pollsters and media outlets called the 2020 presidential election in favor of Joe Biden over Donald Trump, Johnson said that he spoke to Trump twice, recounting that he urged Trump to exhaust every available legal remedy to restore Americans' trust in the fairness of our election system.
Which the Democrats do every single time they lose an election.
Right. And that he was heartened by Trump's intention to ensure that all instances of fraud and illegality are investigated and prosecuted.
Which they have not been, but I don't blame him for trying.
No. But these are supportive words.
I'm glad to hear some of these things. Yeah.
Johnson also said that, you know, the allegations about these voting machines, some of them being rigged with this software by Dominion, there's a lot of merit to that. And when the president says the election was rigged, that's what he's talking about. The fix was in a software system that is used in all around the country that is suspect because it came from Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, which we talked about plenty of times. I mean, Mike Friedenberg has talked about this in detail in past podcasts or radio shows.
Yeah, and nobody has a problem admitting it when it's going on in Venezuela. It's only when it gets closer to home and it's their guy.
We are the most powerful country in the world, and for this to happen
for
in
another
our country,
5 minutes with our current president.
Right, yes. Yes, that's true. But what was interesting is that he in October 2022, Johnson then said he never supported claims that there was massive fraud in the 2020 election. That's where my half point is. Like,
So if he's trying to backpedal on some things he actually said, that's not good.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm kind of
I'm with you on that. If he's trying to backpedal, and of course, it just depends on how they want to parse the words. I think one thing that's undeniable, even if you had different opinions about the Dominion machines, mm-hmm. is the different states that unconstitutionally changed their election laws without going through the constitutional procedure. That we know was making things ripe for absolute fraud.
Right. And again, he still supports Trump to this day. You won't find a bigger person supporting Trump behind him. And I don't think Trump is going to be attacking Johnson anytime soon.
Well, better him than giving it to the Democratic minority leader because the Republicans couldn't get their act together.
It's true. And the last thing I was going to mention too is he's one of the seven or eight Republican House leaders that voted against establishing that national congressional committee about January 19th. Was it eight or seven of them?
He voted to establish the committee?
No, to not.
Oh, yeah. Good.
He thinks it was a waste of time just like I did. Yeah. I don't want to waste my tax dollars.
It was nothing but a circus.
Yeah.
And it was not a real investigation. If it had been, they'd have investigated why Nancy Pelosi didn't use the police or take Trump up on calling out the National Guard that day.
And honestly, I think we're at the count of number four for people that were arrested for this event out of how many people that were involved in this event. I mean,
you're not hearing this in the news. These anti-Israel riots, a lot of them broke into the Capitol building. I'm sure there have been some arrests, but how much are you going to hear the media talk about that?
None.
And what kinds of prosecutions are we going to see compared to the January 6th people?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk about climate change now. During a town hall in 2017, Johnson said that he believed that Earth's climate was changing, but questioned the scientific consensus that climate change is caused by humans. Under Johnson, the Republican Study Committee in 2019 called our favorite politician, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, she's an expert on everything.
Yeah, exactly. He called her Green New Deal a greedy new steal. I love that.
That's great.
Yeah. And he called that wind and solar the most inefficient energy sources we have, and claimed that living near wind turbines actually could cause depression and cognitive dysfunction. I had to do some research on this, and it's done by a study in New York University, actually. They actually studied, saying that the noises from the wind turbines actually happen to cause sleep paralysis, thus leading to depression and cognitive dysfunction
I love the way Trump used to mimic that. Honey, I'd like to watch the news tonight. Is the wind blowing?
I can agree on this. Wind and solar are definitely inefficient power sources. I mean, we talked about that before with these electric vehicles. They're not going to generate enough power to charge these vehicles as it is, based on how many people are going to buy electric vehicles by 2035.
Fred Flintstone starting his car with his feet in motion was more source of energy than that.
Now, here's the issue I have. There's 331.9 million people that live here in the United States. And according to our recent census, there's only 1.4 million people that live in a 5-mile radius of these wind turbines, which we would be concerned for. So we're talking about a very small percentage.
That's because, big revelation, the people that say they want alternative energy don't really want it. They want a two-cast system.
Right.
They want us too poor to drive, period. Right now, they're wanting to outlaw gasoline engines. They would eventually outlaw electric engines if they could. Not for them.
Yeah, no.
Only for us peasants.
Right, exactly.
But we can go back to the horse and buggy as far as they're concerned.
But what my concern about this is, again, I know you want to look out for those kind of people. I mean, it's over a million people we're talking about here. But I'm still saying that's such a minority amount of people, and there's bigger issues ahead of our country than these wind turbines and people living near there.
Yeah.
So,
unlike our president saying that climate change is the most existential threat to our world right now.
Here's one that I completely disagree on him. It's about covenant marriages. Do you know about these?
Well, if it's anything like common law marriage, yes. If it means something different than common law marriage, then I'm not sure.
It's like a religious contract where you say you're never going to divorce, or if you are, you're going to have to go through a lot of therapy.
Oh, I see.
Yes, and he's a big advocate for it. He was the very first state to push that new kind of policy into the country.
Well, that is supposed to be implied in the vow we make before God anyway.
Right.
How much the government needs to get involved with it, though, I think would be a completely different question.
Agree. And I have to agree with the critics here. It just creates roadblocks for no-fault divorces, because it sounds like you just have to blame them. Oh, I'm divorcing him because he's abused me or something.
Well, that's the thing. But is somebody going to make up some accusation now when in reality maybe they're just tired of the person, they met somebody new? Yeah, I agree. I think if you're taking a vow before God, do it knowing you're going to answer before God on Judgment Day, and then let the government just stay out of it.
And then to do these mandatory classes that the state has, you're just harming between the kids and the children that you might have within your marriage as well, because you're dealing with a lot of screaming, a lot of emotions, and you're doing it probably in front of your kids, probably, or the kids are actually there to hear these.
And you're
kind of
taxing
arguments.
Everybody else to death for these classes,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly. So that's the number one thing I would say I disagree with him entirely on, and I'm very happy that we actually agree on this, too. He also said something interesting about evolution, in my opinion, here. In 2016, Johnson delivered a sermon that called the teaching of evolution one of the causes of mass shootings. People say, how can a young person go into their schoolhouse and open fire on their classmates? Because we've taught a whole generation, a couple of generations now of Americans, that there's no right or wrong. It's about survival of the fittest. And you evolve from the primordial slime. Why is that life any sacred value? Because nobody's sacred to whom it's owed, is what he said. I disagree entirely in terms of him saying that evolution is the main cause of mass shootings.
Well, it just really depends on what kind of evolution somebody believes in. There are
what they're teaching in school, for that matter. Yes.
There are theistic evolutionists who believe God started the evolutionary process. However, if there is no God and life evolved randomly, then it is true that there's no right or wrong, and we don't really have the moral compass to tell somebody that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. I think that's where he was trying to come from. But just to be fair to people who believe in evolution, there are different kinds of beliefs in evolution, so I want to be a little balanced with that.
That's why it's called a theory of evolution, because it's just a theory.
It is a theory. And again, are you talking about microevolution, which we've observed, or are you talking about macroevolution, which we haven't observed?
Exactly.
Are you talking about theistic evolution, or are you talking about randomness and chance? So it really depends on what kind. To just use the word evolution and throw it all into one bag, that's probably not fair.
Right. So again, it's a law of gravity, not a theory of gravity. It's not a law of evolution. It's a theory of evolution.
It sounds like what he was trying to say was that moral relativism is the cause for our problems, but he's backing up and relating moral relativism to a byproduct of evolution.
Truly,
and it might have been better and clearer if he had just stated it that way.
Truly, I think it's mental health. That's the number one cause. And then number two would be our media, actually, to be honest.
Well,
because again, we glorify
and
it
evil.
Too much.
And sometimes people are just, you don't have to be mentally ill to be evil. People are just evil. And this is something the Bible teaches very clearly.
Mm-hmm. So next up, he also talked about abortion. And this statement I don't agree with for abortion. In 2015, Johnson blamed abortions and the breakup of nuclear family for the reasoning for school shootings. And again, this relates to my whole mass shooting situation, he said. When you tell a generation of people that life has no value, no meaning, it's expendable, then you wind up with school shooters, is what he says. I don't know how that relates.
Well, we are a culture that is devaluing life more and more, and abortion is an example of that. Again, to make it sound like it all emanates from that, that might be a little bit of a stretch.
I will agree with him about the breakup of nuclear families, for sure. I mean, nuclear families, as it is very toxic environment, and to break it up even more just causes a big explosion.
Well, I would say abortion and infanticide and euthanasia, there's a whole litany of examples of how we're devaluing life.
Mm-hmm. So here's another part where he actually started to step back on his statements, going over about Ukraine and the war there. Johnson has supported ending American military aid to Ukraine in its war with Russia. However, as soon as he was elected the Speaker of the House, he said that he was open to talks regarding Biden's request for additional funds to help the Ukrainian counteroffensive against Russia.
Wait, maybe I misheard you the first. Are you saying that originally he was not in favor of the war, but now he's
Now he wants to talk about it.
To talk about it. But saying that maybe we don't have any business over
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Okay. Again, I can see both ways.
When did he change his position? Before they voted him in as Speaker of the House? I don't care for the backpedaling. I kind of lean with Mike Friedenberg that maybe we shouldn't be getting involved over there. But he could have a different opinion, and I could respect that. What I don't respect is somebody going back and trying to explain to us what they really said when we all heard what they said.
Exactly. And moving on here, another one I don't agree with entirely, his stance on medical marijuana. In 2016, Johnson opposed the expansion of medical marijuana in Louisiana. He argued that medical marijuana can actually worsen some conditions, specifically epilepsy, he wanted to focus on. And he was quoting the American Epilepsy Society's studies. It can cause severe dystonic reactions and other movement disorders, developmental regression, intractable vomiting, and worsening seizures in children with epilepsy. Now, why I disagree with that is because then And there was, I just looked it up, there was a study done by Syracuse University who did a study on medical marijuana and its effects on epilepsy. And they actually shown that it's actually the opposite results. They actually are helping kids with epilepsy themselves. So I'm kind of mixed on this situation. There's one study that says this, and there's another study that shows a different result. So I'm in favor of actually trying to produce medical marijuana because we are in a society where it's very hard to get any other medical solutions to certain issues. And epilepsy is a huge issue in our country right now.
Well, so, and then other things too. Medicinal marijuana has been used to just remove pain and yes, things people. I'm not enough of a doctor to comment on the effects of it. Morally speaking, while I have a serious problem with recreational marijuana, mm-hmm, I do not have a problem with medicinal marijuana.
I don't either. Yeah. There was a story I remember while I was visiting some family in North Dakota, because North Dakota does not allow medical marijuana, and this family lives up in Minot, North Dakota. They have to travel 2 or 3 hours to get to Minnesota, where it is legal there, in order to get it to their doctors and use it. And they can't use it in North Dakota either because it's obviously illegal. So they have to secretly do it in closed doors or hope that the cops don't happen to show up and arrest them for using that illegally. So it's a very scary situation for them. And they can't move because the dad has a very high paying job in North Dakota in the oil industry over there. So it's a very hard situation for that family for sure. Next up, prayers in public schools. Now, personally, I'm all for prayers in public schools, I think.
As personally, long as it's not forced on them. If somebody's family doesn't believe in praying, that's fine.
Yeah. So he, on April 2018, Johnson joined Republican State Attorney General Jeff Landry and, oh, my favorite Christian evangelist, Kirk Cameron. Ugh, can't stand that guy. But that's just
as
me.
A person or just as an actor?
Both.
Oh, my gosh. What's your problem with Kirk?
I think his views on my religion are completely
he's saying things about Catholicism that you don't...
Exactly.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah. So he argued under the First Amendment for student-led prayer and religious expressions in public schools. At that time, there was a state court case that was going through at the time, not allowing prayers in schools. And so they were protesting in the matter of that. One of the things that kind of concerned me was that Smith and the board were accused of permitting teachers to incorporate various aspects of Christianity inside their class presentations. The only reason why this concerns me is because I feel as if we should give equal time for other religions in there. So, for example, I understand I don't like the Muslim religion itself, but I do think that they should be allowed to pray in their certain fashion at schools personally. That's just my opinion of the matter on that. But again, prayer in school in general, I'm just so for it, obviously. I grew up doing that in my school. They gave us a moment of silence. I would be able to pray to God and thank him for this wonderful life he gave me every single day, even at that young age of 6 years old.
And even in California schools, it's one of the best kept secrets, but part of the curriculum is to teach about Christianity because it's part of our American history.
I agree. Yeah.
And so if you're teaching it historically, I agree it's not the place of the teacher to convert. But even then, if somebody talked to a teacher afterwards or during recess and they were discussing a problem with the school counselor and the counselor said, well, let's just pray about it, that shouldn't be a problem. It's only a problem when people are forced
to do
something religious that they don't agree with.
It reminds me of God's Not Dead too. I can't believe I'm referencing that movie. But
another one of your favorites.
I know. Yeah. But what the teacher was doing in that movie was just referencing the Bible to relate back to the Indian peaceful guy. What was the name of the peaceful...
Mahatma Gandhi, you mean?
They were relating Gandhi to the Bible and Jesus, and she was just referencing one Bible verse, and that was it. And the whole movie was a big stink. Oh, she said Jesus in the school. I was like, I could clearly tell as an audience member that she was just using it as a whatever. Anyways, the last thing I'm going to mention about Mike Johnson is he says that the number one priority always in his politics is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the interest on the debt.
That sounds like a bone he's throwing to the Democrats.
I know, right? So this is just me personally. That's his number one priority always when it comes to politics.
As somebody who's paid into Social Security all these years, I do agree that those who've paid into it are entitled to get something back. But whether we should have ever had it in the first place is another whole story.
Right, exactly. And again, because maybe blame it on my young age, possibly of 27 years old, about to be 28 next month here, or in a few weeks, actually. Blame it on my young age.
Assuming you're never going to see any of that.
Exactly.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Of course.
Baby boomers out there taking over. No, in all honesty, it's not my personal number one priority. And I don't think it's going to be anyone else's number one priority when it comes to this upcoming
election. At the turn of the 20th century, we didn't have Social Security or income tax. It was assumed that the church would just take care of people's needs in old age or when they lose their job. And they did.
Nice.
They did.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting how now government's trying to step in on all the whole situation. Right. So, okay. So overall, Mike Johnson, I think, is a great pick for Speaker of the House.
All in all, you like him. You have a few concerns. And it sounds like your concerns are pretty valid. Now, you've investigated him more than I have. I have not known much about him up to now.
Well, I do have to look into that Freedom Caucus thing. I had heard
that on the news just the other night. And I like the Freedom Caucus, but I'm not going to be down on him if he has some reason for not being part of the Freedom Caucus either.
It's probably something personal, I'm assuming.
Well, sometimes it's a procedural thing. If he stands for the same issues they stand for, whether he's a member of them or not, that would be my main concern.
You know, one of the things we talked about last time is getting a third party and then switching it while in office.
Right.
Oh, Mike Johnson would be perfect for this situation because those rhinos would be like scared to their boots if he was a third party member all of a sudden in this really conservative group and he was going to be showing off.
Of course, they could call a vote to get rid of him if he did that right away.
I doubt that he would get, I mean, he already got voted in. I don't think they would do it just like that. I think he's got some time inside a Speaker of the Office role. But again, good job. Well, I want to say good job to Matt Gaetz. I think there was bigger issues ahead, but he got what he wanted. He got Mike Johnson in as Speaker of the House, and I guess that is mission accomplished for him. So now it's time for the House to actually step up and say, okay, so what policy should we follow through
on? It's time for Republicans in general to do the cotton picking things they promised to do while they're running for office.
Exactly. So we'll have to wait and see. But until then, Bob, thank you for this wonderful time tonight. It was a lot of fun talking about
Brendan. It is always a pleasure having you. You always bring up great stuff. We'll see the rest of you next time.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.